Hello and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast for the weekend of December 25th. We're brought to you by Shooters Nagoya. I'm Jim Allen, and standing in this week for John Gibson is Michael Westbay.
Good evening.
Oh, excellent. You're very energetic tonight. We are both rocking and rolling and ready to go after a number of misfires and blank firings and all kinds of firings we could have. We've had an event-filled week.
Yeah, and first I'd like to give a shout-out to John Gibson and his family.
Yep.
He had a slight family emergency there.
Right, things went, our schedule went a little derailed, so we're coming to you a little bit late, but we are coming to you, and we are going to get it done because we are like the mailmen.
Ooh, yeah.
That's right. We're like the baseball versions of Carl Malone here in Japan talking about Japanese baseball. Okay, now we're going to talk about the changing landscape here in Japan and, of course, the latest news about Yu Darvish and some of the other fellas who are going to the major leagues. The bags are juiced, so let's start clearing the bases. All right, now, talk about easy come, easy go in Fukuoka. Now, I hate to use the word meltdown, but we had this wonderful team built up in Fukuoka over the last for a long time actually, a lot of veterans, and all of a sudden they piled all this talent in last year, and they came up with this wonderful, wonderful season where they had the deepest rotation in Japanese baseball, I think, without any question. Maybe the top end of the quality, you could argue. But
And they even made it to the Japan Series finally.
I know. Isn't that amazing? For the first time since the introduction of the Pacific League playoffs, the Hawks were in the Japan Series and won it.
Uh-huh.
And, okay, now it's over, and before they could blink an eye, 528 and one-third innings of their best starting pitching has vanished. It
all
was
gone.
Vaporized. It was like a Star Trek movie. It went away so quickly. So let's do a really brief recount for those of you following along at home. Tsuyoshi Wada, who was their best starter this year, in my opinion, went to the majors as a free agent. Toshiya Sugiuchi started a kind of an interesting chain reaction when he complained about the team's evaluation system for the second straight year and then said, look, I've had it with you guys and you're disrespecting me. I'm going to go play for the Omiuri Giants.
Yep.
And Dean J. Holton pretty much did exactly the same thing, although I don't know if he ever had any words with the front office.
Yeah. And in the front office, that was Kobayashi Itaro, who was in charge. And he seemed to be trying to put in some moneyball techniques without first talking about it with the players. And that seemed to be Sugiuchi's biggest complaint.
Yeah, this has happened. I mean, this happens pretty much every time teams try to go beyond the normal accounting system of, well, you had a good season. We, highly value your wins and your effort and your guts and you name it. And
your heart.
And your heart, yes.
I have to be here for John tonight.
You do. Well, because we count on that. And fair enough. I mean, people do evaluate contributions in different ways. But a couple of teams have tried to strike out blaze a trail in sort of a accounting system and pluses and minuses, and it didn't make Sugiuchi very happy. And in a fairly heated discussion last year, he is saying that Mr. Kobayashi said, "Well, if you are a free agent next year, do you think any teams would be interested in signing you?" Well, I guess we found out the answer to that.
Yeah.
The Giants snapped him up in a heartbeat.
Well, the Yokohama DNA-based stars were also interested in him.
As they should have been. He's a quality pitcher. And I can't speak to Mr. Kobayashi's evaluation system. I know what he is. He is a friend, and I know what he was trying to do in the long run, but how that came out in the short run, I have no idea. Well, in any case, he said, look, I'm the one who caused this. It was on my watch, and I still want to help the Hawks win. He came over to help the baseball side after being the head of their marketing arm. And he was the president of the Hawks marketing company.
And did a very good job with that.
Did indeed, and he's very good at. He was, in my opinion, a key part of the Hawks' success. However, easy come, easy go, and now he has he's quit as the head of baseball operations, and he is now going to work in the international department.
Right.
Which should be, I think, he's a good guy, and he's going to continue to be a positive force for the Hawks. Now, did that really cost him something? That's a good question, which I think we can debate. I think the answer is probably yes. In the long term, probably no. But you really don't want that kind of interruption in your front office. I mean,
well, he was putting this new Moneyball technique type system into place, and now all of a sudden it's just going to be ripped out. And
who knows? I don't think that's going to happen. I think essentially they're going to keep going.
You think they will keep going?
Sure, because the people around him, you have to understand that SoftBank is a cutting-edge technology company.
Okay.
And the people I spoke to last summer when I was trying to sell them a baseball projection system, trying to evaluate essentially career value of the players in their system and in Japan, the people who I talked with, Kobayashi and two of his cohorts, struck me as being very well informed. One was a scout, one was involved with scouting, and one was their data analyst. Very well informed, and they asked very incisive questions, and we had a very productive conversation. So, I think that movement is not going to stop.
So you put this idea into his head and got
no. We did, you know, we had discussions, and some of which are confidential.
Right.
And I won't relate to them regarding specific players, but the fact is that, we had discussions about player evaluations and player projections and a number of different things that were always very enlightening. Mr. Kobayashi's a really smart guy. He's one of the few baseball players to come out of Tokyo University.
Todai!
That's correct. The doormats of college baseball. He went to, when he finished his career with Lotte, he went on to Columbia to get an MBA from Columbia University. He's a very smart fellow, and natural to take over with the Hawks. He's very loyal to Mr. Son and to the organization. And yeah, I wish him well, and I think he will continue to contribute there. I wouldn't be surprised if the Hawks, now that he's in charge of international development, that they will have the best foreign player input in Japan. So things are never as dark as they look. And part of the thing with the Hawks players is Sugiyuchi and Wada are coming out of, you know, they came out of college, I'm going to say in 2002. And they are essentially, they're in the decline phase of their careers. So they're losing a lot at the moment, but over the course of a couple of years, they were not going to be in a growing market. And I think this was something that Mr. Kobayashi might have tried to impart to Sugiyuchi, but
to his detriment.
Yeah, I think so. Whatever happened, it was not the best outcome. It was probably not the best outcome for anyone, because Sugiyuchi probably would have preferred to stay with the Hawks. To some, at least until next year when he could go to the majors.
Yeah.
In any case, That will not be the case because he's burned his free agency rights to.
And he's got four more years now.
Four used to be three, and now it's four. So, anyway, the Hawks are now in a position where they have to rebuild or reorganize their pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have what it takes? Now, they have two guys to build with. The first is Tadashi Setsu, the Rookie of the Year in 2009. As a middle reliever, and mm-hmm. they have also Kazuyuki Hoashi,
yes,
who has signed from the Cebu Lions. So they've got two starters, and they've got a bunch of guys who are, some of whom are going to be pretty good. I think the Hawks are going to have a pretty reasonable rotation. I think they're sort of where the Yakult Swallows were about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Before the emergence of Yoshinori Sato, they've got a couple.
The Hawks also have a good history of developing pitchers very well.
They do. However, that has sort of stalled. I think part of the history they had of developing pitchers came from your former Bay Stars manager Takao Obana. Although I have my doubts about his methods. I don't really understand them, but I know he's...
Everywhere he's gone, he's done well with the pitching staff.
Everywhere he's gone, the pitching staff has improved since when he took over, and everywhere he's gone, the pitching has gotten worse when he left.
Uh-huh.
So I have no doubts that he was some factor in that. He was the pitching coach when Wada and Sugiuchi and Arakaki were...
Saito.
Well, Saito had been around for a while,
mm-hmm.
but he was that pitching coach who was in charge then. Mahara, he was in charge of that. So, yeah, it was he was a big guy, and how much of that that know-how remains in the organization is a good question. But
mm-hmm.
The manager Akiyama has now had a taste of success. He now knows the roster inside and out, so I think they have a good platform for success. But yeah, the pitching is going to be an interesting question. What can the Hawks come up with on
mm-hmm. and all season long, the Hawks have been bringing people up, and they've been performing very well.
Sure.
More so in the field than perhaps on the mound. But
we had this parade of. We had this parade of starting pitchers from the Hawks. You look at the Hawks, Iwasaki and Yamada and Otonari and Oba, and those are the guys who stick in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they
were given little tryouts.
Yeah, I mean, they were going in there and they were effective. They weren't always effective. Nobody's always effective.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a plan that worked. They weren't afraid to make changes when things didn't work. They got guys, if guys stumbled, they got them back on track. As a group, they had amazing, it was quite a good contribution. Now, the interesting thing is, these guys are good pitchers, and I would think Wada right now is at the very max. I don't think he'll ever be as valuable as he was this year.
Uh-huh.
Not getting anything for Wada because he went to the majors
as a free agent. Yeah.
Now they will, however, get something for Sugiuchi, and that could be interesting. They've liberalized the compensation rules so that
today's Nikon Sports said they were looking to get a pitcher. I'm looking forward to see who the Giants are not putting on their protected list. And Yokohama's doing the same.
Right. Because the Giants, they can only protect 28 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a lot of talent in Yomiuri Land up at Kawasaki. So it's going to be really interesting to see what acquiring a 31-year-old third baseman and a 32-year-old starting pitcher is going to cost him. I think
mm-hmm.
it could very well cost him some real talent. I was having that discussion today with my coworker, explaining that Well, one of our baseball news today was the San Francisco Giants losing Carlos Beltran as a free agent after he played for the team for, you know, a month and a half. And that's a brilliant. This is Moneyball at its finest, mm-hmm. because they got a guy they didn't have to pay him all that much, and not only did they not have to pay him all that much, but he was a quality player. I think he was a quality player last season. Now this counts. Now what happens is, I haven't seen the free agent rankings, but I'm guessing he's an A free agent. And that means the Cardinals will give up their first round draft choice next year to the Giants.
Okay.
Now this is what people don't talk. This is what is never mentioned in the free agent debate, is that the Giants have now one of the top, the Cardinals, and they're the world champions, so they'll have the last pick in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still a first round draft choice.
Right.
And that cost the Giants essentially very little. So you couldn't make a trade for a 34-year. It's the value they can get from a first round draft choice. Is the downside is that, okay, Beltran will be better than the downside, but the upside in the next 5 or 6 years, when you look at a team that is becoming very young, is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
It was a situation where, boy, the Giants made out like bandits. And if you read Moneyball, this was a big part of the A's success, is that all these free agents who left, everybody was going, woe is me, boy, the A's are really messed up. But what the A's did was mine the compensation draft picks. And they got guys like Steve Swisher's son, and a number of other guys who Barry Zito and them, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of players who were very, very valuable. Like thinking of Joe Blanton, who was very successful with the Phillies, and a number of players who were very, very solid major leaguers for peanuts.
Okay, let's bring that to what's going on with these Giants, the Yomiuri Giants.
Well, yes, what is going on with the Yomiuri Giants? They're looking like the Yomiuri Giants of 10 years ago.
Taking up free agents from everybody and
Mr. Hirooka, who's the Tatsuro Hirooka, who is the head of the Yomiuri Giants OBKAI, their Employees Association, said it's disgraceful that the Giants have to go out and purchase players on the open market and can't develop their own.
But Hanna has been bringing up very talented players from the farm the last couple of years, while the Giants have not been playing the free agency market.
Right. Well, they did. You know, the last time the Giants went heavily into the shouldn't even say that, but they've been very effective at mm-hmm. getting veteran players from other teams in the last 5 years. We had Alex Ramirez, we had Odesawara, we had
Odesawara was the last one.
Who was the last Japanese free agent? But there weren't free agents. Mark Kroon was pretty effective.
Yeah.
Dicky Gonzalez, Seth Greisinger.
Okay.
I mean, that's a wave of talent. That's
I act kind of like the Japanese press and the Gaijin don't exist.
Yeah, okay. Well, they did exist, and they did help him win. You know,
they did.
Three consecutive Japanese Central League pennants. So there was something going on. They had that influx of talent, and Ogasawara, by the way, was the first Giants free agent to win an MVP. In fact, Ogasawara was the only Giants player to ever win a postseason award.
Really?
Other than, I think Kimiyasu Kudo was the Central League's best pitcher in 2002. And other than that, they have drawn a blank. They've won nothing. And think of all the players the Giants have brought in, and they haven't won. They weren't bringing home pennants. They weren't winning awards. They weren't leading the league in any significant categories. It has been a pretty mediocre record. And all that time, it's got slow and old.
Mm-hmm.
And
Hirosawa comes to mind.
Sure. Hirosawa, Roberto Pettigini.
Yeah.
Who else? Akira Eto.
Eto, yes.
Every save leader. Let's see. I mean, you can count the number of Pacific League save leaders who pitched for the Giants in the last 3 years. We had Toyota. We had Masahide Kobayashi.
Mike Itoo.
Michael Nakamura. There was perhaps one more whose name escapes me, but and then we had Mark Kroon coming over, but which I think we're going to get to in a moment. But the point is, they got old and slow. It wasn't a really healthy combination. Hara changed that. Hara was a big ray of light for Yomiuri, and he did at the same time that they were bringing in quality players. And Alex Ramirez was a real quality pickup for them. Yes. No doubt about that. They were, the Giants organization was expanding their minor league, was doing two things, expanding the number of games their minor leaguers played.
Yes.
And Hara would go down and say, look, I have to tell you a story. When Hara became the manager for the second time, I had a chat with his head coach. We were talking about this and that. And oddly, I wasn't trying to poke into this direction, but he answered, and he said something to the effect of, on the Giants, we're going to use the whole roster.
That's interesting.
The guy plays. Now, this is what I at first considered lip service.
Oh, okay.
I had no thought, no... it might even have been 2000. I don't think it wasn't 2002 when I did this story. It might have been, but anyway, in any
2002 case, was still his first stint, wasn't
that
it?
That was his first stint. Now, it could have been then, but it might well have been in 2002, but Hara was an unknown, and it's nothing for a manager to say, I'm going to use all the, you know, strength in the organization. Every manager says it. Almost no managers actually mean it. What they mean is all the strength. This means all the good guy, the big guys whose names I know.
Right.
And wherever else I need to fill, you know, to plug in the gaps. Hara went down and he used everybody in the lineup. He used all these fringe players who were cluttering up the previous manager Nagashima was tripping over, didn't know the names of. Hara said, "Oh, look, this guy can do this. Let's use him. And this guy can do that. Let's use him in that." And he got this amazing. Hara has always had, has always got tremendous production from his bench.
Yes.
This is not a typical strength of the Giants. And he developed a fast bench. This is all another atypical aspect of the Giants. And he developed young players, and this is a third thing, something that hadn't happened since the free agent era began. So, with those three things going on, bringing in veteran players at the top and this pressure on the bottom completely changed the dynamics. So I don't think that what we're seeing this year, acquiring Murata and Holton and Sugiyuchi, is basically a return to the bad old days when we're going to win with big names and we can't afford to try out young players.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think Hara is not that manager. But the dynamics have also changed within the Yomiuri Giants.
Yeah, well, they were getting older.
They were getting older, but Ramirez is now gone, so that's a spot. And I know, Michael, that you're a big advocate of this, of the opportunity knocks theory of baseball excellence.
Yes, when one star disappears, another rises.
Well. Or
the sun has to set on some in order for it to rise for others.
Yes, absolutely. And, by getting rid of big players who are past their prime, they're basically playing to Hara's strength, which is developing young guys. Now, there's been some unhappy campers. Yoshinobu Takahashi has never been he's been very productive, and this is the thing. He's never been happy with Hara's system, which puts him in uncomfortable roles. But Hara has got more performance out of him
I thought he was over with a few years ago.
Sure. He had no business. It looked like his career was dead.
Yes, I thought so.
He was hurt and or non-performing and or whatever. You know, he was not motivated. Another of that category, the kind of players I put that his former running mate Kazuhiro Kiyohara was in. Players who are motivated when they feel like being big stars and kind of mail it in the rest of the time. Shinobu was that kind of player, and to be honest, Tatsunori Hara was that kind of player.
Yes. So I didn't really care for Hana as a player.
No, me neither. I mean, he was a really talented player, but his approach was kind of ass backwards. He was a star, and it was about image, and that was about it, you know. And he was about being Hara, like the Giants. So anyway, what a shock that he took the Giants' biggest star, essentially. The guy who was going to be the new hero, the hero of the team, Yoshinobu Takahashi, and said, "Look, you're not getting the job done. Take a seat. Go back in the minors."
Yeah, that takes a lot of guts for a manager to do that in Japan.
And with the Giants, take a big star. Wow. Okay, so he does it. He does it with Lee Sung-kyung. He does it with everybody. Anybody who doesn't get the job done, down to the farm team. I got guys down there going to play their butts off. So better do the same. Great message. Okay, so, yeah, I don't think... And Takahashi had a career year under Hara in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And it might have been 2007. My memory's a little shaky at this time of the evening. And he had a tremendous year when he came back from injury this year.
Yes.
Filling in. I mean, he was the first in August. I think it was the end of August or beginning of September, became the first Giant, in fact, the first player at Tokyo Dome to hit opposite field home runs there this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit two. So, you know, he was a big part of their late season comeback, and he didn't like, you know, and he was batting at the bottom of the order. And when he had his career year, Hara made him the leadoff man, which he took as an insult. And there was,
because he wanted to be powerful.
He was a middle of the order RBI guy. There was talk that he would become a free agent because he was tired of the Giants treating him like like he wasn't a big star. He's still there. Okay, so yeah, so the Giants, I think they got Murata, and they're gonna lose some talent. I'm curious, like I said, we're curious to see who they're gonna give up.
Yeah, to see who they don't protect and who gets taken by Yokohama and SoftBank.
If they do take anybody, sometimes they look at the SoftBank. I think is more likely that SoftBank will say, well, I do know SoftBank was interested in a couple of the Giants pitchers last year. I'm guessing that there was some talk of a trade that never materialized.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, a player, so let's say Tomashino. Did I say Tomashino? Yeah. Tomashino is a guy who's got decent stuff and more or less just needs to have a good coaching in a good environment and have his head
a chance to play.
Yeah, he needs a chance to pitch and go through his ups and downs, and the Giants gave him that, and but he never quite made it with the Giants. He might have a better chance. He's a pretty good he has a chance to be a pretty good pitcher, and he would be a good one to get, and I'm guessing that if the Hawks given a chance, the Hawks might collect him. He will certainly be available.
There's
no chance that Giants would leave him on a protected list, you know, and leave off somebody like Taishi Ota or, you know, one of their big guys with a future. So the Giants are really interesting, too. They're going to have a tremendous pitching staff, and you had an interesting point and about what happens when the Giants look like locks.
Yes. We haven't discussed that on this podcast, but
we discussed it last night in the pre-podcast.
Yes. One of the things that I had said One of my observations of the Giants over the years is that when they look absolutely dominant on paper, they fall flat on their face.
It's happened a lot.
It's happened a lot. Since we came here,
it's almost a dominant trait of the Giants, like their inability to get a Japanese, develop a Japanese closer. And looking at the Giants, this is one of their Achilles heels, that inability to win. Now, part of the reason for that, I think, is that when the Giants teams that we're talking about, the failure to win, are these post-free agent era teams.
When they gathered a whole bunch of home run hitting sluggers, they had a whole lineup of number four batters.
They had a whole bunch of old slow guys, some of them who got on base, most of them who didn't. They had a couple of young guys with futures. Was a bunch of big stars. Weren't they called the
Yomban Dasen one year?
Yeah, the...
And the overweight Dasen.
I'm trying to remember all the...
Taiju Dasen.
Taiju Dasen, remember that?
Yeah.
Heavyweight, yeah.
Heavyweight, I kind of translated it as overweight.
Overweight, okay. That might be the Metabo Syndrome lineup now. They've had a couple of those. They were old and slow, and Hara's team is they're not the speediest team in the world, but the Giants are the fastest. Right now, the Giants are the fastest Yomiuri team relative to the league in, I would venture to say, since the V9 era or before that, or perhaps ever. They might be the fastest Giants team in history in relative to the way the game is played. So, yeah, I don't know if that's going to be an issue with them or not. It's another thing that's going to be...
Well, one of the guys that they got, Murata from Yokohama, he has really impressed me this past year with his hustle. He did not really run that hard the previous couple of years. Of course, he did pull a hamstring at the WBC a couple of years ago. And that really hindered him for the rest of that season.
2009, yep.
And in 2010, he seemed to just not quite give it his all anymore, as though he was afraid of pulling that hamstring again. So in 2011, when he came out and really hustled, really ran all out on every ground ball, yes, he still grounded into a lot of double plays, and he was thrown out at home way too often, but he hustled.
He hustled. Now, this is what his advocates say, is that he's a gamer. My impression of that is... maybe. a gamer, as I mentioned, along the terms of guys who want to play when they know everybody's watching. Because they don't want their friends to see them. What's the word I can use?
Just going about it laxically.
Lollygagging, to use a great expression from a famous baseball movie. They don't want to see him lollygagging. Well, he was a pretty good lollygagger, as a number of guys can be. That'll be interesting to see both what the Giants do, if the Giants can come up with a closer, if the Giants, speaking of Achilles' heels that mentioned the closer, never really developed one. They had guys who were pretty good when closers were not a main feature of the team. I mentioned a few of them the other day, or at least I made a mention of them. Where's my numbers? Dee,
The time period when everybody was expected to throw a complete game.
Right, Yukinori Miyata with the end of the V9 Giants, and Mitsuo Sumi, and then Mr. Katori, who was the head coach I spoke to. These were all quality relievers who were kind of 9-inning guys when before the save was the big issue.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still talking about a time when the pitchers are finishing about a quarter, I shouldn't say a quarter of the games, maybe a fifth of the games. Until now, they're probably finishing about 5%.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese closers have never really been a feature of the Giants. They had a couple of guys. Mr. Ishige was good to some degree. He had a 20 saves. He might have had two 20 save seasons, but he didn't have two in a row. Mm-hmm. Kun was the first who ever had two in a row. Uehara was very good, but he set a Giants save record. I think 34 saves was the record.
Uh-huh.
So it was not. It was sort of something the Giants didn't do. Now, the other Achilles heel the Giants have had in the last year is second base.
Yes.
It's almost as if second base is an invitation to find another job. If the Giants put you at second base, it's almost like saying, play well or else. It's the motto giwa of the Omiuri Giants, mm-hmm. the corner, the window seat.
I thought Shinozuka was there for a long time.
Well, Shinozuka was. That is true.
Was he the last real second baseman they had?
Let's see. He may well have been.
I remember Motoki was there until he got injured. He bumped heads or something with somebody.
Well, Motoki ran out of speed. it was basically Shinozuka, and then Kaoru Okazaki, and then Motoki, and then... I guess Toshihisa Nishi.
Nishi.
Was a quality player. And since Nishi, Nishi had a bumped heads with Tatsunori Hara.
Uh-huh.
He could never play for Hara for one reason or another. He could not produce when Hara was the manager. And pretty much the lack of a second baseman has been Hara's two. The closer and second baseman. So what we've got is the Giants have since had a yearly pattern of trying to find foreign second basemen, and mm-hmm. They haven't gotten it done yet, so we'll see. And then they had Mr. Fujimura last year, mm-hmm. who's a light-hitting glove guy who can run like the wind. And so he's exactly Hara's typical bench player.
Pet project?
He was a pet project. Hara believes he can be turned into a real hitter, but if he can turn into a real hitter, it's one of those cases where he sees something, and, to be honest...
He sees the speed.
Yeah, he sees the speed, but he also sees a bat that I don't see.
he's hoping that the speed can counteract any lack of the bat.
Well, yeah... maybe. I don't know. I don't see it. I like Fujimura, and I think he's a great bench player. I think his future is as a defensive replacement and as a pinch runner.
Okay.
I don't ever see him. Now, if he plays regularly, his batting average will come up in time. Mm-hmm. But by the time at that rate, he's going to have to play. If his batting average improves by, let's say, 10 points a year, his ability to hit as opposed to his observed average,
mm-hmm.
improves by 10 points a year, that means he'll probably be good enough to earn a regular job by the time he's about 30.
Okay. And then he can't run.
And then he won't be able to run, right. So
speaking of late bloomers...
Okay. Let's talk about late bloomers.
Let's go on to the Eagles.
The late bloomers, I think you're talking about
Yamasaki.
Preserved flowers. Okay, Takeshi Yamasaki, my buddy. A guy that we both admire for a mm-hmm. number of reasons. And one of my favorite players as a minor leaguer, when I first started doing Japanese baseball analysis about 17 or 18 years ago.
Yeah, 94 or so.
That's correct. Two players stuck out. Actually, I'm going to say three players, but two players stuck out in my looking at the minor leagues as guys. Three guys. I'm doing the Spanish Inquisition. There are three main weapons. Okay, the three main guys who stood out head and shoulders above the rest of the field, who could not buy a first team job with the Oryx Blue Wave.
Mm-hmm. That was Ichiro.
Ichiro Suzuki.
Yep.
He was known as Ichiro when he still had a last name.
Yeah.
One guy with the Dragons, Takeshi Yamasaki.
Yep.
And a guy with the Giants, Takeshi Omori. Who hurt his shoulder.
Oh, okay.
His career ended when he hurt his shoulder, but his career was basically...
That wasn't Omura?
There have been Omura.
Right fielder ran into a wall...
Not that one.
Okay.
That comes to mind, but Takeshi Omori was a tremendous hitter. He is the guy who the Giants drafted instead of Motoki in the first round.
Okay.
And so he sort of started with it. I think people in the organization didn't like him because they drafted him instead of Motoki.
Yeah.
He did not look good in his first couple of at bats. And he basically never got a job. He was awkward. He couldn't play third base. He was really a first baseman, DH kind of guy. But he went to the Eastern League, and he was the best. He was, as soon as Takeshi Yamasaki got a job in the Central League, then that left Omori. Omori was by far and away the best minor league hitter in Japan. He was a super hitter. But the Giants just wouldn't use him because they didn't use failures.
Oh, okay.
You basically got to be a Giants regular through the farm system if you were a relatively high draft pick.
Right. Well, he was.
And somebody who succeeds at some level and who has enough support. He failed in that respect. He got these minuscule tries. They didn't like it, and he was done. They had other guys. They had brought in Ochiai instead of him.
First base was kind of a logjam.
Yeah, they had Komada ahead of him. They had Ochiai ahead of him. They had everybody ahead of him, and he was never played. And,
okay, I remember him now. Real, yeah.
Yeah, big...
And he did finally make it up for one and a half seasons.
In 1996.
Yeah.
He was one of the Giants' bright spots in their five-game Japan Series loss to the Oryx Blue Wave.
Yes. That was it.
He hit a home run. He batted. He had about five or six at bats, and he hit a home run and a double. And that got him to be at Ichigun for a little while the next year. Yeah, and then they traded him to Oryx to the Kintetsu Buffaloes, where he hurt his shoulder, and that was the end of him. And now, of course, his legacy lives on, because the guy who couldn't hit his way onto the first team, and I guarantee you, if Hara had been his manager instead of his teammate... In 1995 or 1993, Omori would have been, the Giants would have said, Ochiai, he's kind of expensive for an old guy. Who needs him? Because Omori would have had a much better career.
Yes.
Giants. He would have been a much more valuable player.
Yeah, I remember when he came up, I was wondering why we hadn't seen him more.
Well, because Motoshi Fujita, his first manager, just saw him play defense and said, go back to the farm, we don't need you, son. And he never got a chance to hit. So if Hara had been his manager, he would have played.
Okay. But we're really wanting to talk about Yamasaki here.
Okay, I'm sorry. So Yamasaki is the next guy, and we did talk about him a bit in the last podcast, which was, I think, as my wife likes to say, 300 years ago.
Yes.
Yamasaki is going to the Dragons. He's left the Rock 10 Golden Eagles.
But in his place,
we have
Jose Fernandez. And I tell you, after listening to John's interview with him this past summer, I have become a huge Jose Fernandez fan. I want to see him manage here in Japan.
Yeah, I think we'd like to see that. I think he might actually want to do it. I think he can do it.
I think that he brings something to the Eagles that Yamasaki didn't have. Yamasaki was...
Abuse of his... you mean a lack of seniority system training that Yamasaki brings now?
Well, you know,
he's a positive, upbeat guy.
Yeah, he is. And he really studies everybody on the team.
Right.
And I think that he compliments people. He gives people advice. I never really saw that with Yamasaki. Yamasaki seemed to always be concerned with Yamasaki.
Well, that's understandable when you're 57 years old and you know, you're worrying about your aches and pains. And I kid Mr. Yamasaki because he is one of the few players who will, you know, he's one of those guys who will come out and talk to me before I talk to him. Before I see him, you know, he'll smack me.
Yeah, I love his hero interviews too.
Now, he's a good guy, but he went, and I think he's, you know, he was a victim of the, he was brutalized by the Dragon seniority system and the inequalities of the system, and now that he's made it to the pinnacle, he's determined to propagate the system and, you know, and all it's worth, and he could well have been a fairly negative influence on a lot of the Eagles' young players. You know, they took a lot of stick from him not being up to his standards in some sort of peculiar way.
passing it on.
Right. You know, abuse, heaping a little of the abuse that he got when he was younger. So now he's going back to the team, going back to the Dragons, which we talked about last time, so we can skip over that. But, Jose Fernandez comes in, and he is, I think the Eagles, another guy they could get up, is the other Jose Ortiz. He would be a great addition to that team. Speaking of positive guys, he's not as outspoken. He's not as bubbly.
I kind of refer to him as Mr. Midseason.
Yeah, well, that's because he always seems to be in the Mexican League batting 400 when he's the player in May.
Yes.
So hopefully they'd get him. He can play for a bunch of guys, but Ortiz is a big... Fernandez is a big player. He's not really a better first baseman. Although, to be honest, I mean, if you had a pinch, he could probably play third base, and he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't kill you for more than a... You know, you could play him for a handful of games at third base, and he wouldn't.
As a replacement for Yamasaki?
At first base is DH. He's essentially a DH now, but he can play first base. He's not. He's a better first baseman probably than Yamasaki at this stage of his career. But he's a better influence with his teammates, and he's gonna
hopefully the Eagles can rise a bit higher.
Well, they're still pretty challenged offensively. I think a lot of things, you know, you have to wonder how much health Akinori Iwamura has left in the bank, and the same Kazuo Matsui came on pretty well in the second half, and he looked almost like the player he was
with Cebu.
Well, he looks, you know, 10 years older than the player he was with Cebu. 2003 was his last year, and he was he's had his ups and downs since then, so... But it will be interesting. The Eagles have some young pitching talent. They have a guy who was Marty Brown. I mean, two guys who really developed under Marty Brown were Ryo Hijidisawa, their center fielder, and Motohiro Shima, the catcher. But they are, you know, when the team he had was an old team, a slow team, a fairly slow team, a team without much pop, without a lot of pitching depth, particularly in the bullpen. thin rotation.
Sounds dismal.
Yeah, it was a tough. task. And now they're not going to have Iwakuma even around. So, yeah, it's going to be. It will be tough. I feel for Hoshino. He's in the Eagles. They've been saying what a good economic, what a good business model they have. Mm-hmm. But their front office is a sham.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not a healthy situation there. And Mr. Hoshino had some fairly sharp. Mm-hmm. I won't say they're sharp comments, but they were. He took some jabs at the organization.
Well, they probably needed it. Of course, Hanshi needed it too when Hoshino went there.
Well, and even he wasn't. Interesting enough, he followed essentially the team that Nomura built.
Yeah.
In Hanshin, or much of the talent that he developed in Hanshin helped Hoshino.
Right. Well, I kind of had the impression that when Nomura went to Hanshin, they promised him that he would have free rein to do what he wanted, to get the people he needed. And the front office interfered the whole time.
Yep.
And when Hoshino went there, he said the same thing, but he actually held the front office to the promise. Which Nomura didn't.
Well,
that was the impression I had.
Well, the thing with Nomura is that, at least, he brings a lot of baggage.
Yes.
And I don't mean this as a personal attack on anyone, mm-hmm. but he has his way of doing things, and he has his entourage, and it's a situation where he gets in and he wants things done a certain way.
Right.
Sometimes those ways are not necessarily things that are going to work with the other people around him. So there are often issues. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go too deep because, to be honest, I really don't understand it. But he has tended to alienate the teams he's managed for.
Uh-huh.
The Swallows would have loved to fire him. After the 1997 season, but you know he won the pennant.
He won,
indeed. So they had to wait till he finished fourth in 1998 to fire him.
Uh huh.
And then he could go to the Tigers in
1998. Well, by then I thought he was ready to just relax. And then the Tigers threw so much money at him that he couldn't say no.
Right. And then he had to leave the Tigers when his wife got arrested for tax evasion.
Yeah.
He was actually arrested as well, technically in the papers, although I don't think anybody thought he was involved in that. So that's the second time that his wife, that Sachio cost him a job.
Mm-hmm.
First time was when she was pregnant and he was married to somebody else when he was the Hawks manager in 1979.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they fired him. So... anyway, he goes to the Eagles, and he pretty much ran the whole Eagles front office. And as soon as he left, the vacuum occurred, which stepped in Mr. I think Ibusuki, who's the former Lions scout who signed Kazuo Amatsu, and he started running the show over there. And I think they were, Marty Brown was pretty plain straightforward about it. He said. Yeah, why are they after Kazuo Amatsu? Well, he's the scouting director signed. Ah, interesting. Okay. Why wouldn't the apparently Yuki Yoshimura was on the trading block 2 years ago in the summer. Why won't we acquire this guy? He's got some tools. Because the scouting director's son is a reserve outfielder for the Eagles. Okay. Well, when in August, when the the scouting directors of 11 teams are in Osaka at the Corporate League Championships, it was the University Championships. The other man is in America wooing Kazuo Matsui.
Yep.
Now, this really enraged Marty Brown. You know, he couldn't the organization, the front office, what is the front office doing? Well, chasing Kazuo Matsui, a guy who's older and with a history of a bad back, and talking about throwing a lot of money at him. Now, I'll tell you, in the past, there have been issues where front office guys, this is something they don't write about in the paper.
Nope.
But front office guys with connections have been known to take kickbacks from agents.
Yes.
Players. Now, that may or may not be, I can't say that's the case with the Eagles, but that fits a pattern that has happened in the past, where guys come back to teams and get cut, kickbacks so that they can, make some money off the deal. Now, it was not a big surprise when the Marines started chasing after Tadahito Iguchi. When the Marines front office was bolstered by this guy who came out of nowhere, who happened to have signed Iguchi when he played for the Hawks.
With the Hawks.
Not a big surprise when Mr. Ishikawa mysteriously and suddenly said he would be gone at the end of the season. And the guy who brought him in said, oh, I'm out of here too.
Yep.
So a number of big changes in front, sudden and abrupt changes in front offices in the past have been for this reason. Basically, front office guys were getting kickbacks. Now,
they've got all they wanted and are ready to leave, or they just want to leave before they get investigated.
One or the other, I can't say, and I can't even, I can't say that this was the case with Mr. Ishikawa. I can't say that this is the case with Mr. Ibusuki. I have no idea, but this is a common pattern in Japan of this that is basically talent rises, as I said with Mr. Omori. A lot of talented players get stuck in the farm teams for a variety of reasons.
We discussed that with the Giants earlier.
Right, and one of the reasons is they lack a support network. They lack a bunch of people in their corner. They lack the political clout that it takes to break through to the top team when everything is not perfect. These guys I'm talking about, Takeshi Yamasaki, I'm talking about Shigenobu Shimo with the Carp. Guys who could hit like the Dickens, but were basically told, you go rot in hell. So the guys who have the political clout, they move up. The guys who get stuck on the farm. In the major leagues, these guys often end up in Japan.
Yeah.
Boomer Wells, Randy Bass, some of the biggest stars. Warren Cromartie is less of a case. Warren Cromartie turned down a very good free agent offer from the San Francisco Giants because of a better one from the Omiuri Giants. So no, some of the best players were guys who didn't really get chances in the majors because they were low round draft picks. But that's happened. It happened. A lot of the guys who are here now are playing here because they were better players than other guys they were playing with who got jobs, and they got frustrated and said, if I'm going to get a chance to play in Japan, I'm going to go there.
It's about time to wrap up.
Yeah, so the Eagles are in a kind of odd situation. They have Jose Fernandez, but they still have that. And Hoshino said, look, we need a general manager. We need a front office that does something. Whether that comes about or whether the issue is still Marty Brown's arch enemy or not, or I don't know what the situation is, but that front office is pretty shaky. I've heard there have been accusations the Eagles are fairly, the front office is a very slippery group.
And they were trying to prevent DNA from joining Y?
Good question. I don't know.
anyway, that's a good question for another show.
Well, the story that was being published in the in a lot of the papers was that the Pacific League teams didn't want a company that owned a dating website.
I saw those concerns, but it didn't really seem to hold ground as mobile game was it?
Yeah.
Have been putting all kinds of filters to prevent people from doing just that. But people keep finding workarounds to kind of promote DAI.
Okay, DAI sites. Okay. Well, okay, so maybe we'll move on about this. I'm not very informed, but I do know that
It sounded like propaganda. Like when Watanabe was saying, how is Live Door going to prevent minors from seeing nudity on the internet? When my question for him was, how is he going to prevent minors from seeing nudity in Sports Hochi?
Right. Well, the whole thing is that the whole thing boiled down to in the media, Yomiuri being DNA's sponsor.
Yes.
And telling everybody what a great thing it was.
That's what it looked like.
And the Pacific League saying, hold on a second. And if you read the Yomiuri Shimbun, you would never have known that any teams objected to it.
Oh, that was your sole source of news.
So, anyway, so let's see.
That's good for another show.
Yep.
Okay. We're wrapping up now.
We are about wrapping up. Okay, now, a quick talk about some of the major leaguers.
Okay.
Really quick.
Yep. Tsuyoshi Wada, Jason Koskri in the Japan Times, brilliant piece talking with CJ Nikowski about Wada's prospects, his former teammate in majors, and talked about the harder ball. You know, a lot of transitions for these guys are going to have to face. The balls are different. The style of play. John and I have argued about what is the difference in the style of play. My feeling is that the style of play in the majors is more, you know, be prepared for anything. Well, I shouldn't say be prepared, but have a plan and be ready to react.
Okay.
Today's plan is more try to predict what's coming and prepare for what you expect to come and wait for that pitch you expect. And that requires a lot more intelligence and information that's really available for the majors. I mean, you can do
With adjustment for the ball, wasn't the whole purpose of going to a unified ball this year to be to have a ball that was more international, i.e. major league equivalent?
Yeah, but if they did, why did they choose this ball that had bigger seams and a tackier surface? Why didn't they go to a ball that was essentially the same as the major league ball?
I've thought that it was.
Well, that was the idea. But for some reason, they sort of see the major league ball is a harder ball and it's a more slick surface on the ball,
which
makes it a little more difficult. It had bigger seams than the old Japanese ball, but it's very slick. It's fairly hard to throw breaking pitches for these Japanese pitchers. They find their breaking pitches really struggle. I think they'll probably have better change-ups. I think most of the guys are going to have better change-ups when they go to the majors.
Okay.
But better fastballs.
But the size is no longer going to be an option or an obstacle.
Size is essentially going to be the same. But I think that actually the Major League Baseball is a better ball. And it's something that's easier to drive than what they're using in Japan this year. And it's a little easier to hit than the ball that they were using in Japan because the surface is smoother. A tackier surface will break more. A more dimpled surface is going to break more than something smoother. So they had a ball that gave the pitchers everything for one reason. Why that was the ball, I don't have any idea.
Okay. And speaking of the unified ball, Kato Commissioner had announced that NPB will be continuing to use the ball from the past year. Despite Watanabe chairman's rumblings against it.
Well, that's what he does. That's what he does. He's good at it. So we have the ball issues, we have the cultural issues, we have the strike zone issues. Everybody's going to have to make an adjustment. The pitchers have a lot of adjustments, but...
Right. My main concern is Aoki.
Yeah,
Aoki had a really hard time adjusting to this ball in a familiar environment with a support staff all around him. How is he going to make this adjustment?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we could just look and see how... maybe I'll just pull this up here and see how Mr. Aoki did in the first half, second half.
Okay.
And as we speak, my expectation is he hit extremely well in the second half.
Uh-huh.
Now, while the Swallows ran away with things in the first half, he was not hitting well.
He was not contributing at all. The first half is the impression I had.
I thought I had months on here, but it's hiding. So I guess it doesn't. Okay, so let's just say after July 20th, he was... even after July 20th, he was nothing special.
Mm-hmm.
He's still basically a .334 on-base percentage guy.
That didn't sound quite as high as the previous few years.
No, actually, he had one good month in September. So no, it was not a good season for him. But I think the ball was harder to hit than the major league ball is going to be, and it was a big adjustment. Okay, he's going to have another big adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have to get off to a good start.
Okay.
And he's going to have to adjust to a style of play. The first year could be. The Nishioka nightmare. Similar kind of skill set.
Mm-hmm.
He can't be as bad as Nishioka because he's a more focused, he's a more intelligent player than Nishioka is.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that. I don't think Nishioka is any bright light. And a guy who turns it on when he feels like turning it on.
Yeah.
It's worth his effort. So, do I think Aoki can contribute? Yes. Do I think? I think his career path is going to be very much like Fukudome's.
Oh, okay.
He may get a boost from being different,
mm-hmm.
but those don't last in the majors for hitters very mm-hmm. long. He might if he has success, it'll be very short.
And okay.
Then go into a real funk as, unless he gets a lot of breaks.
Well, he's got a lot of pressure going in because what I see in major league blogs is everybody is comparing him to Ichiro. They're saying he's going to be the next pure hitter like Ichiro.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
And I keep wondering where these people came up with that.
I guess from what he did with the lively ball in the last 6-7 years.
Right. The previous time period.
Right.
But this last year,
to be fair, it was much harder to hit. It was much easier to hit
uh-huh.
in the last 6-7 years than it was when Ichiro was around. And he's
okay.
got 200 hit seasons.
Right. Two 200 hit seasons.
Now, why is he only one with two 200 hit seasons? They play more games than they used to play.
Yes.
He used to play 130 game seasons when Ichiro hit his
mm-hmm.
200. So he had 210 hits in a 130 game season. That's an amazing number.
Yes. Well, that's why when he went over to the majors and did it for nine years in a row with 162 games, I thought that's kind of a tarimae.
Yeah, pretty much. And so Aoki is a similar kind of player to Ichiro.
Okay.
But and in that respect, he should, I think, transition well.
Okay.
But the adjustment is going to be a really hard one. I agree with you there. Can he succeed? Yes.
Okay.
He can be, in my mind, I think he can be a a 360 on base percentage guy for the next 3 or 4 years, 370 if he develops, and he has the tools to develop at his age.
Will he have any power at all?
A little bit, but not much. I mean, yeah, he's going to probably be 5-6 home run guy.
Okay.
Maybe a bunch of doubles, but I don't see it.
Will he walk more than Ichiro?
No, he's going to lose his walks, I think, to keep his batting average.
Because, most of the criticism of Ichiro is that he just hits singles and doesn't get on base. He doesn't work on the walks.
I had an Ichiro called strike watch account during the middle of the summer when he was on the borderline for getting back in the race for his 200-hit season, and pretty much from the middle of July to the end of till the middle of September, he pretty much, there weren't any called strikes against him.
Oh really?
He was swinging at everything. He wasn't taking anything close enough to hit. He was going for it. I think he walked 4 times in 2 months.
That's why they criticize him.
Yeah, and justifiably so. And he says, "Well, he's a snob. I mean, Ichiro is a snob. My hitting is my game. It's my baseball. He's like Japanese baseball. This is what we do. So go tough. You know, tough. We do. Who are you to complain about me?" Okay, now, just before we wrap up, we have Nakajima going to the Yankees.
Surprising.
He says, "No, thank you. To play every day. Please trade us to a team who really wants him." Well, that'll be interesting. I think there's a chance he might come back to Japan so he can be a free agent. Well, the problem is he won't be a free agent, I think.
He's
posted.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So that could happen.
Okay.
Darvish, $51.7 million is very little we're going to be able to say about Darvish right now. And I think we've already answered the one listener's question we had. Who will take the place of Darvish for Nippon Ham? Someone is going to step up and do it, just like somebody's going to step up with the Hawks, and they'll be surprisingly good. And this is Michael Westbay's question, one of our big listeners.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, he's a really big help with this show. And
already Sugano Tomoyuki has refused that privilege.
Yep. And he'll be hopefully
the number one draft pick by Nippon Ham this year. He said he only wants to play for the Giants.
And so, yeah, what's going to happen with the Fighters? Good question. Okay, now we're getting out of time here. I want you to thank you for listening, and if you have any questions, please send them to us by email to yakyujohn, that's yakyujohn, at gmail.com. You can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment. Hopefully John will be back with us next week, or Michael will be back. Either way...
Wow, we'll be back.
What a choice. I know, but what a choice. What a dilemma that would be if we're all available.
Ooh, that would be fun.
It would be fun. Okay, so we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, Michael.